Right, let's say the two examples of what I could see people thinking as they hear this. You know, you've got, yeah. I'm just going to use an example, not in any, let's say, no geological way, you've got a family of people that are, you know, let's say, you know, they're 30s, early 30s. You know, neither of them are particularly, they love the Lord, they love the Word, but they're not Bible trained in any particular formative way. You know, what is to say, what, obviously, I understand your disagreement with having major structures, but do you think there is a call for wisdom in that young man maybe wouldn't be right to go, right, I'm going to go and set up a biblical church now, and I'm going to go and get it, and we're going to set it up. What is the wisdom involved with hearing this? Do we stop going to churches that don't have that structure? Do we set up ones our own? And if so, who qualifies to do that? Do you know what I mean? Like I could sit here and go, right, I'm going to stop going to the church I'm at, even though a lot of it they would probably agree and be similar, but they don't have all the structure implemented, but they do sound teaching. Do I then go home and say to my brother, right, me and you, we're going to set up a new church in this house, we'll get mum and dad to come along, and we'll phone up some of our friends and kick it off? Or do you see what I mean? The wisdom involved with how you implement it, especially in terms of who is qualified, maybe that's not a word you like, but who would be the right sort of person to go, right, let's start up a new church, or let's take this to our church. Do you know what I mean? How does someone implement such an idea on a day-to-day?
It's God's leading, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think God would bless it because you've chosen to do it the right way, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, let's immediately get rid of all this stuff about qualification, experts, anything like that.
Yeah, you've got to go to Bible
you've
school first.
Got the scripture. Yeah, but isn't it interesting? There was nothing like that in the early church. So you've got the scripture and you've got the Lord. Now, in a situation like that, it's going to depend on how God's leading, because there are some people, they hear this and they know that they're tied in with others who go for it. Well, in a situation like that, yeah, get to start a church. You don't need an expert. Now, obviously, if there are itinerant ministries that you can call on to help you out here and there, as long as you know that they're only going to come in as friends, they're not going to get you under the umbrella of their ministry or anything, because that'd be, you know, sort of bad. But the point is, go ahead and do it. But for other people, they think, oh, wouldn't that be wonderful? But they don't know anyone else. And even if they did, maybe they wouldn't be of the character to be able to pioneer something. Well, then, at the very least, start praying, Lord, I know I'm not in the right habitat. I'd love to be. So, Lord, I'm just asking you, work it out. There's nothing I can do about it, but, Lord, you work it out. And stay committed to the church you're already committed at, absolutely. And not to start undermining it, and because that's very unfair, and we shouldn't do that.
What about, I've mentioned to you before we were calling us about a friend of mine who I think, in a not as well thought out way, I don't know if he's in a Christian, I'd say this to him myself, he wouldn't mind, agrees with much of what you're saying, but there are no churches, and he almost uses this as an excuse to not be in any church fellowship. And I have a number of issues with you know, he's got his own issues apart from this. But what about those that would say, see something like this and go, right, because the structure isn't right and I can see that it's not scriptural, and they therefore wield that as an excuse to not go to any church. How do you deal with people that would try and use this as an argument to not be involved in any kind of church fellowship situations?
I would tell them that I think they're using it as an excuse to just not be committed to any church anywhere. Because
any church better than no church.
Yeah. And again, it comes back that, you know, at least for myself, what's motivated me the whole time is just wanting to do what the Bible says. This is not a reaction against anything. This isn't to do with that's wrong. This is to do with this is right. You see what I mean? Now, obviously, when you embrace what's right, there's implications for your relationship with what's wrong. But there are people, you know, and in the early years, you know, of our own church, we found that we went through two distinct kind of waves, and we learnt a lot, and good came out of it, but also it was really tough. And it was when, firstly, we started to attract all the people who heard about something new. And of course, all these people, they wanted to be at the cutting edge. So, you know, all these people gravitating towards us because something's new in town. And, you know, some stayed, not many, most of them went, okay, because it was just curiosity. They didn't want to embrace it. But then eventually we found another group of people, because then we started to attract all the Christians who were churchless. But the reason they were churchless is because they'd run out of churches to fall out with. And we were, see? And so they came along and they caused all kinds of trouble amongst us, and we waved goodbye to them eventually, and they went. So we've got to make it clear, this is not about anarchy. This isn't about leaving churches. This is about trying to start biblical churches. And, you know, and... Yeah, and if someone is a Christian, ought to be in committed to whatever is their honest estimate of the best church in their area. Now, I'd put it to anyone, if there's a biblical church there, that's got to be the best one.
That's why a lot of people go to Messianic fellowships.
Yes.
They're reacting against the main churches. And a lot of them, they've got gripes, and they go there just it's a reaction. They haven't proactively said, oh, I feel called to a Messianic. It's just like, oh, this is an alternative, and you know, and it's got to be better, and it's the wrong reason.
Can I still steer a little bit?
You're here.
You know, taking in a bracket again that I'm that I am from a church, home church background, but we paid a big price for trying to do it right back in Poland, mainly because. Just a bit of background, I think may help. I converted actually on my own. My mum was a Jehovah's Witness, and I kind of went along, being from mixed Orthodox and Catholic background to start with, and then in my teenage years, obviously I went through some rebellion period, went, you know, against everything that I could do. Just cutting long story short, probably the biggest breakthrough in my life was when I realized, okay, that's it. I don't know where God is. And then one night I actually started to pray and said, that doesn't really matter, because I'm going to search for him anyway, even if I'm going to be only one. That was quite naive. I wasn't the only one, but at that time that seemed to, and that was like a big burden taken from my heart. So I said, okay, I'm going to be a Christian. I don't know yet where, when, and I went around some churches. Nothing really suited me well. I went into some arguments with pastors mainly about the structure and all the stuff. It took me a lot of time, probably a year plus, solid Bible reading before I kind of fall into orthodoxy with my belief. And what happened then? Then I was more or less evangelical in my approach, I suppose. But again, still not church at all. Even though I was really trying to be for some period of time. And I find an asylum in a local. I think you have them here in England as well. Some kind of student union thing. We were all at the universities. That's how we started. And obviously, there was three or four guys of us really committed to preach basically at the university campus, and that's how it started. It started because what we did was genuine, and we did it. Obviously, we made a lot of silly mistakes, and then suddenly we started to attract the interest of the churches because we grew, and we grew really big. I mean, relatively big. It was a small town, but what I'm saying, we grew to the extent that the churches approached us and say, you know, what are you going to do with all those new converts? We want them in, and none of us could really say, you know, okay, you know, if I'm not going there to the church, I'm not going to take anyone to the church and saying, you know, that's where the place is. And that was, that was the moment when we had a disagreement. There was three of us. We thought, okay, we need to plant a church. Okay, I don't know how to do it. We don't know anything about it, but we're just going to go along. And one guy said, no, that's freaking scary. I'm out. So basically, that's what we did. No, but cutting again for fast forwarding a story, we kept some relationship with the main churches, tried to act against some
common enemy.
Yeah, and no, it was more than that. I think there was a genuine steering because we didn't go under any authority in local local structures. So we really wanted to be acknowledged one on the other way. There was the home church at that time as well. So we tried to approach them, but their teachings were really, really, really scary. They were really weird. I was just twice the and went out, not quite myself after that. But what I'm trying to say here, the moment we decided to do it, the amount of pressure we went into, the division, because the main so to speak leaders of this union, which was four of us, we went under such an accusation from the local churches, then from between us, because we not all felt like we need to found something. Probably it all lasted a year plus before. I mean, I personally, I had really enough. It was really, 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 really difficult. We were maintaining status quo. And after that time, we had honest discussion again. And I think another guy from among us was quite. He decided he has enough of it. He's joining a local group. And that's when I obviously I backed up from it, and with a group of friends we probably maintained limbo status, having a Bible study in houses, moving from house to house, but not acting as a church. What I'm saying, we were mainly licking our wounds than doing anything. But what I'm saying, we paid the big price for trying it, which means both that there is that there is something in it. But I was acting cautious as well, caution, because we had among all the people I knew from those Christian churches, there were a few quite stable older Christian believers who were our personal friends, but they were in the mainstream of churches. Seeing from the distance, I mean, God showed us a lot of things, and then I was a part of More Health here group for some time, which was great. But cutting long story short, I'm not sure if I would do it again, same way. Not because it was wrong, but because at that point in my life, me being relatively fresh convert and having nothing, just no one, no one along, and all the local gathering of churches against, was immense. I know, immense pressure, a lot of pressure.
You wouldn't do it again anyway, because now you're older and wiser. And
no, I wouldn't. No, but what I'm
you said you were all quite young then, weren't you?
Yeah, we were really young. Yeah. Now I'm saying, I mean, I had some. There was one older guy who I really trusted. He was kind of a street preacher, 22 years in drugs, converted on the street, and he was a regular church attendee, but he was quite on the edge of it. But he then spoke a word of wisdom to me at that time, and he advised us to. To try to hang at least loosely be coupled to a local church, which I said no at that time. And what I'm trying to say is that now I'm pretty sure I've done wrong, even though the whole thing was good. I'm pretty sure sooner or later we will be able to do it, or we will be able to grab the main meaning and do it, but But at that time, we paid.
So basically, so this model of the biblical church is not without its problems. If you've got a group
and
of people,
what, yeah, that's what seemed to be my experience. That's how I started. The movements I sympathize the most. I would say this is my home. Our home churches movement, which I only wish I could meet them before because I haven't. You know, we started this group. And then I just realized, no, we're not alone. And there are a few kind of bunches of home churches in Poland, and they are totally different.
But if you'd had one or two mature believers with you, to help steer.
Yeah, but we didn't have.
That's what I'm saying. No. That's what we needed. Right. That was the problem. Right. Yeah. That was obviously.
And
the
we were all pretty messed up as well, which is.
Yeah. But this is why.
Which doesn't help.
This is why there are those of us moving heaven and earth to get resources out there to people that they could, that had you had them to draw upon. And obviously, you know, there's all manner of things which are quite biblical, and there may be we try it and it doesn't work. Okay, fine. There are people who try marriage and it doesn't work, but that's never an argument for not marriage. And so, you know, I think that the point is that, you know, I would want to really help people to be assured if the Lord is with them and if they're clear what Scripture teaches, well, hey, come on, where two or three are gathered. And I think that the point is, again, part of the tragedy of the system and, you know, is this whole thing that we've been conditioned, that we're not, we can't be trusted. We've got to be under some sort of covering of... Why? And who are these experts? What's the difference? If you look at the institutional church system, I mean, is there any reason why I should have any particular trust in it? If you look at church history, we're looking at the history of the institutional church. Well, my goodness, I'd rather put my trust in a few Christians struggling with the Bible and Lord show us what to do than I would in these experts.
You mentioned resources. You've got a website that can help people.
Yeah.
Do you want to give the name of the website?
Yeah, we've got a website. Mm. It's www.house-church.org. Mm. And like Chigwell Christian Fellowship is... and yeah, we've got, you know, there's lots of, you know, stuff on there teaching about church. There's a book that's available. And also, we make available, you know, a catalogue of about 300 tapes, whole Council of God teaching, you know, salvation, spiritual gifts, church life. Yes, yes, for my...
He's Bible teacher. it's not just the one subject person.
Yeah, you know, and also, you know, there are people who'll, you know, sort of go to people and help them out. And, you know, but it's just that for me, part of the beauty... Because the Lord is with us, we can know that we are empowered and we are authorized if we are doing what the Bible teaches. Mm-hmm. And if we fear mistakes, we'll never do anything. Mm. I mean, imagine if the reformers, of whom I'm no great fan, but I'm very glad that they didn't let the fear of mistakes stop them preaching the gospel. You see what I mean? Because they did get converted. They did get the gospel back. And indeed, when you look at their lives, oh boy, did they make mistakes. But the point is, who doesn't? We can learn from their mistakes. But the point is, as long as we've got the Bible... So I just want people to feel empowered. You know, that if this is something that you're seeing in Scripture, you don't need to be an expert. And the point is that, okay, I'm part of what you might call, you know, we've been going for years, so we've got elders, da-da-da. But remember, when you start a church, it's like having a baby. It doesn't start off, you know, sort of like 5'8" tall, you know, sort of listening to reggae. I mean, it starts off as a little and grows. And that's the thing with the church. And it might literally just be getting round each other's houses, doing a bit of Bible study and prayer, having a meal, and then it will grow into something else. What I mean?
One of the things with your pattern was that 1 Timothy 3 does seem to suggest that those that were involved in setting up and keeping the church going, you know, it talks about, you know, he must not be a recent convert, or he may become conceited. I don't mean that as a criticism of you at all, but, you know, I love this idea. And I can see that it's something needed in my community. But I personally do not feel I hit the 1 Timothy 3
But remember, that's about elders, though. You don't have to be an elder. And by definition...
But would you say that elders would be necessary, though, in some capacity?
Eventually. But that might be years down the road. You know, and if you've got a church of, you know, there's still only 7 or 8 people, well, you don't need elders in that kind of situation. So the point is, we've got to understand that that's talking about qualifications to be recognised as an elder in an existing church that is coming clearly to maturity. In order to start a church where 2 or 3 are gathered in my name.
Well, it is very interesting, actually. Throughout Acts, you do see that Paul went and appointed elders. Now, he didn't appoint, he didn't set up the church. He appointed elders within a church, which I suppose suggests that there was a church, and Paul's job was now to go, right, okay, now we need to get... But exactly what you're saying, that the church started, well, but it didn't have the elders going on. That was part of Paul's role.
It's worth just saying about that. Both the instances of appointing elders, and it's bad translation, obviously, these are situations where Paul, in Acts and Titus, they had started these churches, all right? So the point is that they'd gone into a situation, they'd lived there. These new people had got converted. And so the apostles stayed with them for a while and merged them into churches. And the apostles acted as acting elders until such time as the church was strong enough or had elders of its own, and then it'd move on. And sometimes, as in the case of Timothy and Titus, Paul would leave one of the team with them a bit longer, and he and the rest of the team would go off. Now, the Acts 14 thing about appointing elders is that Paul and Barnabas, they've been heading west, planting churches over years. Now they're heading back east again, back to Antioch, and they're revisiting these churches that they've started. So, obviously, it's natural that they should be involved. Yes. And also, they've taught these churches, be on the lookout for your elders, because you'll recognise them because of here. You know. Now, what's interesting, the Greek word, when it says Paul and Barnabas appointed elders in every church, what's interesting, the Greek word for appoint there is kairotonio, and it's the Greek word that was used of voting in the Athenian legislature. It's not appoint. It's literally they put their hand up. And what it's talking about, remember, the apostles birthed these churches. They had a relationship with them. So when they went back and they said, well, look, anyone being, you know, how about elders? And people are saying, well, we think Fred, you know, he's doing really well. And Dan as well. Crumbs, he's come on. And Paul and Barnabas are saying, well, yeah, we remember when they got converted. And they really, you're saying that, and they joined in as part of that consensus. Yeah. Now, also, what's interesting, in the other instance where you get the word appointed, and of course, King James says ordained. Ugh, could not be more wrong because of all the implications. But the Titus one is that Paul had left Titus with the churches in Crete precisely until they had their own elders, and then he was going to leave. Now, the Greek word that gets translated, because Paul says appoint elders, all right? Now, the Greek word is used elsewhere in the Bible, and it's used in Acts 6 when the churches chose the deacons. And in Acts 6, what the apostles are saying is that you choose these 7 men, and they said, we'll hand the responsibility over to them. That's the same Greek word that Paul used to Titus. And so what he's saying to Titus, he says, look, remain in Crete until they've got elders, and then hand your responsibilities over to them. And bang, you come back to me because they won't need you anymore.
I think that's the point, in that, you know, we do have these churches here that eldership grew and came... Not at the instant of birth, exactly. But a little. There were people there that helped kept it going, and they wouldn't leave until there was some strong, clear eldership going on. But it wasn't at inception.
Well, that's right. And one of the things that I try to do with churches that have started, you know, sort of, is that I try and every now and then get to spend some time with them just to help them along. And that's all it is. I'm just going as a friend. It's not, you know, it's not a big ministry. I'm just going as a friend and brother to help them along. Exactly, yeah.
So you're an apostle?
Well, I mean, I don't like that. You know, I mean, I'm actually technically, I'm an Ephesians 4 pastor teacher.
Right.
Apostles were evangelists as well, and I'm the worst evangelist in the world. But the whole point, the whole push about leadership, it's the church. It comes from the bottom up, not from the top down. You see, or it is from the top down, It's from Jesus down, but you always know when it's from Jesus down, because then it's always from the body bottom up, you see. Yeah. But as soon as you get hierarchical leadership, you actually decapitate Jesus as the head of the church.
Yeah.
You see, and then he's not the acting head. He's he's the positional, but he's not the acting head. And the beauty of a biblical church, such as I'm describing it, is that you're actually set up so that Jesus is your actual working head. See?
Okay. I think we're...
Three steps. Because a question came up earlier about an individual who feels absolutely disenfranchised from the denominational structures that he's been exposed to or whatever, and he's wondering what to do. And the temptation is to come away from the denominational church and just sort of, it's me and Jesus together, and that's how it's going to be.
That's what I see.
Now, I think that it's worth looking at that, because I think it's vital to see that we need to ourselves be biblical as individuals. And I think anybody facing a situation like that, the first question is not to say, oh, who can I meet with? What can we do? But to say, how do I myself become thoroughly biblical in who I am and what I'm doing? Mm. So there's a very personal responsibility and accountability that I think is the first step. And when I'm in a right place with the Lord, then I'm sensitive to his spirit to hear what he's saying in terms of who I'm to relate to and how we're to proceed. But the trouble is, I think a lot of people who are in that isolated position, they actually don't go down the personal holiness route. They just dig in to some kind of resentment and they get very bad-tempered with everybody else. And it's just a very destructive situation.
Yeah, I think I've seen that, you know, people that... And even, I even introduced... this person to a church that, you know, okay, has the same structure, but in terms of its teaching is sound. And one of the issues with the church that he was very heavily involved in is that it didn't have sound teaching either, so it's, it fell down on both on both things. But as a result, he just, for, you know, 3 or 4 years, you know, he always has something to say against every other church and every other denomination.
Yeah.
But there's no willingness to try, even a church that I had recognised was sound in its teaching, even if, you know, there were differences with structure. And it's almost like, you ever seen a child that's really wound up, but because they're so small, they can't really do anything. Like, they can tap someone, and that'll be their biggest strength, but it's just not going to do anything. And I almost see that sort of mentality of they're really frustrated, they're really angry, but because they're on their own, because they haven't got any believers, and because they're really unwilling to contribute and try anything, they're just this individual, frustrated person that are unable to change the situation. And so, you know, it just doesn't do anything. They just sort of stay there. They use the excuse that there's no perfect church, therefore they won't go to any. And expect that they're in the right. And on that final day, God would say, yes, you were right. There were no decent churches, so you were right to not bother joining
So this issue of personal growth is the critical factor. Because in that situation where you feel isolated, at least you're not isolated because the Lord is there. But if you don't take the trouble to develop that relationship, well, then I don't see that there's much hope. It's just a tragic situation. But then again, that applies, doesn't it, right across the board, because we can be talking about biblical church, which is wonderful, but we must never, ever divorce that from biblical me.
Yes.
And if we do, then, of course, it will go wrong. It's bound to, because it's got to be producing holy people. See, that's what happened with Wesley. Okay, we could all sort of ask questions about Wesley and everything else, but when they started those cottage meetings, the primary thing was not structure and how we become biblical churches, but the issue was, how do we become holy? And that's got to be the starting point, and we've got to go on with that. Can I just ask another question, which is very related, but it's a slightly different angle. This question of leadership of a biblical church, because it's all very well saying we're all Indians and there's no chiefs, but that can't be right. And I dare say if we ask people who are part of your church, have you a leader, they would say, of course we have, it's Beresford. And that's quite right, is it?
Well, no, they say we've got two elders.
Oh, okay.
But again, we're not saying that there isn't church leadership.
Right.
What we're saying is that it's a very, very different type of leadership than you see in unbiblical churches. So that we certainly see that the decision-making responsibilities as a church lies with the church. So any decisions that need to be made, whether it's, you know, sort of like what night do we have Bible study, to more seriously, should someone be put out of the church, all decisions are taken consensually. Now, obviously, one can say that obviously elders are leading brothers in the sense that if you've got someone that you've recognised as an elder, then precisely you're saying, here is someone whom we have seen proven that they do hear the Lord. But we're not therefore saying, so I'm just going to do whatever they say. But the point is, there's going to be an especial maybe listening to what they say. Mm-hmm. So the point is, people will certainly be looking to you when decisions have to be made, but elders are part of the decision-making process. They're not the process itself. And so to that extent, you know, for me, the default of an elder, because first of all, you're just a brother. I'm Beresford. I mean, elder is just function. Okay. We don't say, oh, Elder Andy or Elder Beresford. It's just a function.
Right.
And the default of eldership is that it's backseat and invisible. And it only pops up when it's needed. Now, a lot of the time it's needed and it's still in the background, beavering away, helping people, influencing people. But if you go to a biblical church, if you know whether you went to a Sunday gathering or a midweek gathering, you wouldn't know who the elders were unless you asked. Mm. you see what I mean? Or unless something extraordinary happened that the elders had to act, but that would be extraordinary. So it's not saying there's no leadership, but it's being clear that the leaders are not in charge.
Leaders aren't the performers. They're just leaders on matters of need.
Or the decision makers. Or the decision makers. Mm-hmm. So the point is that, as I say, decision making is collective. And for me, the biggest example is precisely when someone needs to be put out of the church. Jesus said that goes to the church. And in 1 Corinthians 5, when Paul's dealing with the issue of putting someone out of the church, no mention of elders. Now, obviously, they're going to play a role, but the responsibility lies with the whole church. So leadership, but it's not up front, if you see what I mean. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. We're probably running out of space on the old storage thing here. Probably going to have to sort of touch on. We can have a break and then, you know, we can choose sort of to come back and carry on the discussion if that's okay. Mm-hmm. We've used up all the drinks as well, more or less. I'm sure there's a cup of tea out there waiting for us. So if we can stop that for now. Okay. Thank you.